is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Thanks for listening. I'm your host for today, Susan Franson, and we will be hearing from Dennis Hart.
Thanks very much, and hello again, everyone. There was plenty of news around Iowa last week, and among the biggest stories, the man accused of killing Iowa State student Celia Barcaine Arosemena pleaded guilty to first-degree murder on Friday. 22-year-old Colin Richards will be sentenced August 23rd. A first-degree murder conviction carries with it a mandatory sentence of life in prison without the possibility of parole. Barcaine Arosemena was found dead with multiple stab wounds last September at the Coldwater Golf Links in Ames. In West Des Moines this past Saturday, police confirmed that four people, including two adults, along with a 10-year-old boy and a 15-year-old boy, were found dead inside a home. All had suffered gunshot wounds. The adults were identified as 44-year-old Lavanya Sunkara and 41-year-old Trondiskar Sunkara. And yesterday in Des Moines, six people were wounded in a drive-by shooting. The victims ranged in age from 16 to 20 years old. All were said to be in stable condition. Back in Ames, another story made statewide news last week. A man was in custody after police said he tore down the pride banner displayed at the United Methodist Church of Christ near downtown Ames and set that flag on fire. 30-year-old Adolfo Martinez of Ames was charged with criminal mischief and disorderly conduct. Authorities said Martinez had been kicked out of a bar, returned, told a bar employee he was going to burn the place down, then left and returned with the church's pride flag. Authorities said he set it on fire on 5th Street. Police said Martinez admitted ripping the flag from the church at 6th Street and Kellogg Avenue, then burning it. The church's pastor sent an email to the congregation on Tuesday saying plans were in the works to replace the banner. Then Thursday, the pastor told the Des Moines Register that what Martinez said and did was the definition of a hate crime. Also last week, presidential politics made big news around Iowa. For starters, President Trump went to Council Bluffs, where he said, among other things, that farmers would be better off financially after he's done hammering out new deals with U.S. trade partners. The president came to Iowa after the Environmental Protection Agency finalized a rule allowing for year-round access to E15, gasoline blended with 15% ethanol. Iowa is the nation's biggest ethanol producer. Before coming to Iowa, Trump lashed out at Democratic presidential hopeful Joe Biden, saying the former vice president was the weakest mentally in the Democratic field. And on the same day Trump was in Iowa, Biden showed up in the state as well. He campaigned in Ottumwa, where he said he hoped the president's presence in Iowa would be a clarifying event. Biden said that's because Iowa farmers have been crushed by what he termed the president's tariff war with China. He added that Trump thinks that being tough is great. And he said, in Biden's words, it's really easy to be tough when someone else absorbs the pain. He added that Trump is an existential threat to America and to the American standing in the world. The latest Des Moines Register, Mediacom, CNN Iowa poll shows Biden is the leading Democratic hopeful among likely party caucus goers. Meanwhile, another Democrat came to Iowa last week. Andrew Yang showed up in Iowa Falls to the home of Kyle and Pam Christensen. He went to deliver good news for the Christensens. Yang had chosen them to receive $1,000 a month for 12 months. The payments are part of Yang's attempt to demonstrate how his campaign's central theme, that the federal government should guarantee every American adult a universal basic income of $1,000 a month, would change lives. Yang is also giving a family in New Hampshire the same gift. And while all this was going on, Iowa Republican Senator Chuck Grassley weighed in last week, saying that President Trump's use of executive authority on tariffs showed that Congress had given too much power to the presidency. And last week, Iowa's other U.S. Senator, Republican Joni Ernst, kicked off her re-election campaign at her fifth annual Roast and Ride in Boone. Ernst vowed to represent all Iowans and their values and to, in her words, protect the balance between government responsibility and individual liberty. Senator Grassley, along with Governor Kim Reynolds and Nikki Haley, who is the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations and a former governor of South Carolina, joined Senator Ernst at the event. Also last week, former Iowa governor and current U.S. ambassador to China, Terry Branstad, showed up inside an Iowa courtroom on Friday. He defended a decision he made 8 years ago to ask for the resignation of a gay state official and to cut his pay. Branstad is being sued for discrimination by former Iowa Workers' Compensation Commissioner Chris Godfrey. Godfrey is a Democrat, and he's gay. He accused the Republican Branstad of cutting his pay as punishment after Godfrey refused to resign when Branstad took office. But the former governor testified that he never asked Godfrey to resign because of his sexual orientation, and he never lowered his salary because of his sexual orientation. Weather made big news around Iowa again last week, weather that had taken place earlier. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration reported that Iowa had set a record for rain and snow over the past 12 months. The state recorded more than 50 inches of precipitation from June of last year through this past May. That's about 16 inches more than the 34 inches the state averaged per year from 1981 to 2010. And weather may have played a role in a fatal crash on Saturday that killed a Nevada woman. 27-year-old Nicole Henson died when the SUV she was driving just north of Nevada was struck by a pickup truck. Several other people were injured. A band of heavy thunderstorms was moving through the area at the time. In other news last week, a Davenport police chase resulted in a fatal car accident. Police tried to stop a vehicle driven by 19-year-old Angel Ochoa and started a pursuit when he did not stop. Ochoa's vehicle crashed into a car driven by 48-year-old Lori Letts of Davenport, who was pronounced dead at the scene. Meanwhile, a 78-year-old Kellogg man died after he was found inside a grain bin last Thursday. The victim was William Hotger. Kellogg and Newton Fire and EMS personnel had rushed to a location in rural Kellogg after they'd been notified that a man was trapped inside the bin. In Des Moines, a man was behind bars for allegedly threatening to kill his father and for firing dozens of gunshots inside a home. Authorities said 27-year-old D. Du fired between 25 and 30 rounds in the basement of the home after an argument with his father. Still in Des Moines, a man was arrested after police said they found thousands of grams of various drugs inside his apartment. Gene Descaline was picked up after authorities found 520 grams of cocaine, 473 grams of methamphetamine, and 1,300 pounds of marijuana. Total value of the drugs was set at $235,000. There was also a story last week about the adoptive grandmother of a teen girl who had starved to death who briefly escaped prison. 64-year-old Carla Ray Bausman is 1 year into a 20-year prison sentence for failing to seek medical attention for her 16-year-old adoptive granddaughter, Sabrina Ray, who starved to death 2 years ago. Court records discovered last week revealed that Bausman left her prison grounds back in May and was headed into Mitchellville when prison staff spotted her. She had gotten a half mile from the prison when she was found. In Waukee last week, police asked residents to register their home security cameras so that authorities could request footage if some kind of incident takes place nearby. Police departments across the nation are turning to homeowners to establish a network of cameras throughout their own communities. Among them, Cedar Rapids, which began its community camera program a year ago. And it was video footage from a home security camera in Brooklyn, Iowa, that led police to the car used by the man accused of killing University of Iowa student Molly Tibbetts last summer. Meanwhile, a strange story emerged out of eastern Iowa last week, where the Cedar County Sheriff is not honoring arrests made in the community of Durant because, the sheriff said, he cannot rely on the truthfulness of Durant's police officers. Sheriff Warren Wethington said his jail will not book suspects booked by Durant officers, and he's barred those officers from even setting foot inside the county law enforcement center. It's a complicated story involving personal, professional, and political disputes. Also last week, word that a pair of Des Moines bar owners filed a lawsuit seeking to block the city's attempt to close their club. They're asking a judge to nullify a Des Moines ordinance that requires bars to get a conditional use permit in order to secure a liquor license. Brothers George and Cornelius Qualley own the Lime Lounge. They also filed a second lawsuit alleging that city officials defamed the bar in media reports and harmed the business financially, and they're seeking more than $12 million in damages. There was also news that Tasty Tacos, a Des Moines-based company known for its fried flour tacos, had filed a trademark infringement lawsuit against an Ohio-based company for its Wicked Tasty Taco seasoning, saying it conflicts with its name. The lawsuit was filed against More Than Gourmet, the company that produces and distributes the Wicked Tasty Taco seasoning. There was also a story last week that the Des Moines Social Club, a nonprofit group and entertainment venue dedicated to the arts community, is facing financial trouble. The group said its operating costs outpace its income. The club has held a wide variety of arts-oriented activities, including showcasing local artwork, throwing a big New Year's Eve party, and operating a food truck, Throwdown. And speaking of money, did you hear the story last week about the Des Moines woman who has just hit the jackpot? A $300,000 jackpot, to be exact. Her name is Patricia Inman, and she won a $300,000 Iowa Lottery scratch ticket prize. she bought her winning ticket at a convenience store in Des Moines. Congratulations, Patricia. And there you have it, your summary of quite a week of news indeed from all around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, happy to have been in this seat on this Monday and planning a return visit this coming Friday when I'll have news from around Ames. In the meantime, whatever you do between now and then, I hope you have a safe, healthy, and happy week.
March went out like a lion, a-whipping up the water in the bay. Then April cried and stepped aside, and along come pretty little May. May was full of promises, but she didn't keep them quick enough for some. And a crowd of doubting Thomases was predicting that the summer'd never come.
But it's coming, by gum, you can feel it come. You can feel it in your heart, you can see it in the ground.
You can hear it in the trees, you can smell it in the breeze.
Look around, look around, look around.
June is busting out all over the meadow and the hill. Buds are busting out of bushes and the romping river pushes every little wheel that wheels beside a mill. June is busting out all over. The feeling is getting so intense that the young Virginia creepers have been hugging the bejeepers out of all the morning glories on the fence. Because it's June,
June, June, June.
Just because it's June,
June, June.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and now that we have heard the news and a musical reflection on the weather, we are ready for our first guest, or perhaps I should say guests. Kinsey Phillips, ISU Police Department's first mental health advocate, is here with her therapy dog, Zosha. Hi, Kinsey.
It's nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
We're interviewing you because I read a story by Lynn Caron that appeared in the June issue of Facets, which is included in the Ames Tribune or other local papers published by Gatehouse Media. So probably a lot of our listeners already know a little bit about you, but we thought they might like to hear from you in person. Thanks for coming in today, Kinsey.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you told me before that you actually knew Lynn Caron, who wrote the article. How was that?
Yes, that was great working with her. We actually went to high school together, so it was kind of fun to see everything come full circle.
Okay. So you both got jobs in the real world.
Exactly.
Now.
And we're both still in Ames.
So we'd like to hear a little about how you prepared for your job.
Yes, absolutely. So I actually went to Ames High, like I said, and then Iowa State right after that. I studied psychology and animal science, and that was great. I absolutely loved my 4 years at Iowa State. And now I'm actually in grad school for counseling. So I'm getting my master's in clinical mental health counseling and clinical rehabilitation counseling. And so a lot of that coursework and then also my time at Mary Greeley Medical Center in the behavioral health unit has really prepared me for this job as mental health advocate.
And in what way has it prepared you?
Yeah, so my time at the hospital has definitely allowed me to understand mental illness more clearly. You work with everyone there from people that might have anxiety or depression to schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, more extreme illnesses like that. And so that's really helped me to be able to better understand mental illness. And then also the classes and the coursework on top of that has definitely made an impact as well.
And you said you studied animal science. Did you have an idea from the beginning that you were going to work with a therapy dog?
I did, actually. That was kind of my dream in high school, to somehow help people but use animals to do it. So whether that was dogs or horses or whatever, I was very excited about using a therapy dog. And just the job at Iowa State has really helped me to be able to do that, and they had a lot of faith in me with that.
So Zosha, who is being very quiet because you told me that the part of the training is not to bark.
Right, absolutely. She has to be calm and tolerant and very welcoming of all people.
Well, she's a golden, so I know that they have a head start.
Absolutely.
So how was she trained?
Yes, so I got Zosha from Iron Hill Retrievers, which is in Delmar, Iowa, when she was about 6 years old. She was actually a breeding dog before, And so after I got her, I just knew with her temperament and how sweet and calm and tolerant she is that she would be a great therapy dog. So we did about a year of training, lots and lots of obedience classes, and then she went through two different certifications to become a therapy dog. The first was Canine Good Citizen, and we just did that at our local kennel club. It's basically an obedience certification, making sure that they can be out in public and they'll listen to you. And then we went down to Des Moines, and she got her Therapy Dog International certification.
Oh, Therapy Dog International.
Yes.
So you can go anywhere with her, right?
We can go in public and then also places where we ask if she can go inside. So places like hospitals, we do volunteer here at Mary Greeley, and then also on campus with the students there and staff and faculty. But yeah, people just seem to love her. They're very drawn to her, and she's just such a sweet girl.
Well, actually, when I was talking about bringing you in to the station, one of our other hosts said that at finals time, we had a program that we actually aired from the ISU library. And she said that they had several dogs there, and the kids were just the students with anxieties over exams were just lined up to pet these dogs.
Right. Yeah, that was Barks at Parks, which is the week before finals during Dead Week at Iowa State at the library. And there's plenty of certified therapy dogs that go, and they just get to hang out with the students and kind of help de-stress them. Zosha was there, I think, most days this past Dead Week, and she just loved it.
Yes, well, I remember from our Golden that the more hands on the head, the more hands on the back, the
exactly.
happier she was. Yeah, so
that is true of Zosha as well.
So it must be. Now, you must deal with some situations that are really pretty stressful for you, and even if Zosha can handle it pretty well.
Yes, she does handle that very well, and sometimes she helps me out too.
But you said when you were at Mary Greeley that you dealt also with the some people with serious problems, you know, schizophrenia. And I imagine one of the things you learned was how to spot the difference between just anxiety or depression and serious mental illness.
Yes.
Now, can Zosha do anything for serious people with serious mental illness?
You know, a lot of where she comes in is just the part where she allows someone to hang out with her and to pet her and just to really de-stress in that way and to calm them down. So whether that's somebody with anxiety or it is somebody with a severe mental illness, she can help either population. And I think a lot of, you know, my training with her is just to make sure that she's tolerant around all people. She doesn't discriminate at all. she's great with everybody. So that's been really awesome to see how she works. And when I did work at Mary Greeley, I would take her up to the unit every now and then, and she'd be able to see all the people that we had up there. And it was really nice to see their reaction to her.
Yes. Now, do you work does your work at all overlap with the Ames Police Department?
Yeah, we actually do collaborate with them a decent amount. They have a mental health advocate as well, Julie Saxton. And so when they have calls through Ames PD, whether it's working with students or staff or faculty there, we'll be, you know, notified about it and have to collaborate with her and figure out where we're going to go from there to provide them support and resources.
And I guess the police aren't trained to deal with potentially violent people. In fact, I had a friend who had a family member who was really severely mentally ill, and she was very impressed with the detective that they had at the time at Ames Police Department and how well they handled, you know, the situation. And so you don't go into a situation like that, though, do you?
Most of the time, well, actually, I could say all the time, when we were to go into a situation, the officer would go in first to someone's home, whether we'd be called into a welfare check to check on somebody. They'd make sure that the situation is secure. And then if it is, then they'd allow me to go in and talk to that person if they're having some sort of mental health crisis. So they're always going in first and making sure we're okay. Thankfully, I appreciate them so much.
This was a phrase in the story that puzzled me because, to me, a welfare check is something that you that arrives in the mail and that you take down and get cashed. So a welfare check has quite a different meaning in mental health, right?
Right, absolutely. So at the police department, if we get called to do a welfare check, that might be from the person who's in distress, or it could be from a family member or a friend who's very concerned about someone. So it would go to our dispatch center, and then they would call an officer and potentially me to go with, and then we would go and check on that person wherever they may be at.
And do you occasionally have people who aren't glad to see you?
You know, most of the time they're pretty understanding. You do have those rare circumstances where maybe they aren't, but most of the time when someone is concerned about a family member or a friend, they do take that well, and, you know, they understand.
Okay. And so are there any situations that stand out to you as especially difficult?
Yeah, I think it can be hard when someone doesn't realize that they need help. That can be definitely difficult. I saw that a decent amount at the hospital when people are very sick. Sometimes they don't understand how much help that they need. But, you know, when you get to the kind of the end of working with them, usually they are very appreciative of what happened and the work that you put in. And especially once, you know, you really get to know them and get to know their story and understand that they're a human being, too, just like you.
Oh, And does OSHA come into that at all, or is it just her being there calming?
I think a lot of it is just her being there. I have the ability to, you know, bring students into our office to see OSHA. And so a lot of times if I reach out to a student and say, you know, we have a therapy dog, I'd love to talk to you and provide some resources and all of that, they will more likely come in if I say that we have a therapy dog, because most people do like dogs, and she's just a great way to help them calm down and relax.
Well, thank you. This is a great story, and I appreciate both of you coming in. And Zosha, our listeners can't hear her, but I can see that she's calming you down.
Absolutely, yes. She loves what she does.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thanks. Well, we're going to – this is KHOI Community Radio, and I'm your host for today, Susan Franz, and you just heard from Kinsey Phillips, Iowa State University's first mental health advocate, here with her therapy dog, Zosha. In the coming months, KHOI will be presenting interviews with a large variety of national and local political candidates. We can already see contests lining up for city council, Story County supervisors, and candidates for the Iowa legislature. But the most challenging to cover are the many candidates coming to Iowa for the first in the nation caucuses that will take place in February 2020, months hence. A local station with volunteer reporters has special challenges in covering all of these candidates, but we are proud of the quality and dedication of the reporters that we have thus far. I'd like you to meet two of them, Cal Halliburton and Merle Crabb. I'll let them introduce themselves. And one of our dedicated political reporters, Cal Halliburton, is here to tell me what his plans are to reach the candidates.
Well, like we did the last election cycle with candidates with Cal, I plan to contact as many of the candidates for the presidential nominations on both sides of the fence as I can. And if they're going to be in the Ames area, then I try to schedule a one-on-one interview here in the KHOI studio. I'm finding that to be a very difficult proposition because they are generally so cramped for time on their travels. And so most of the time I will be recording the events that they attend here in Ames or in the Ames area. As examples, I've recorded Senator Warren when she was at a house gathering in Iowa Falls. I've recorded the three candidates who attended the Big Tent on the Prairie event last Saturday, and we'll continue to try to contact them and get one-on-one interviews if possible, And if not, just go to the events where they appear and record those. Then we'll edit them down into content size recordings and provide them for some of our talk shows here at KHOI. They'll also go on our website under Candidates with KHOI and be available for our listeners anytime, anywhere.
Thank you.
At the Big Tent on the Prairie event, there were three candidates for the Democratic nomination. Mayor Bill de Blasio of New York City, Senator Cory Booker from New Jersey, and Senator Kirsten Gillibrand from New York. One of the things that I found interesting was following the mayor's presentation, he held a press gaggle, and there were many reporters and cameras surrounding him, and there were people from the New York City press covering him while he's here in Iowa. So I thought that was quite interesting. Neither of the other candidates had that kind of coverage.
Did you have a question for him?
Yes, I did. I asked him what he thought of the situation that farmers are in, being squeezed by corporate ag interests from with the prices of inputs and the commodity prices for their product. And he said, well, something to the effect that he didn't favor corporate agriculture. He said that's one of the things he hears a lot from farmers is the squeeze that they're in. And none of that was mentioned in the three presentations that we heard on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. We have more than one dedicated political reporter. The one I'm going to introduce now is Merle Crabb, host of Merle on the Move, which is a Saturday night show from 9 to 10. And he has been interviewing some candidates, and he's actually in the position where candidates are contacting him to be interviewed. Merle, do you want to tell us about that?
And yeah, my name is Merle on the Move. I do a radio show here at KHOI with Saturday nights, like Susan just said. And I've been fortunate enough to work myself in position to be able to talk and know some of the candidates now, not just a face in the crowd. I'm kind of a known face in the crowd now, I guess you could say. And I made that happen because I feel it's really important right now that everybody's active, not just passive. And I believe the last campaign, I was too passive. I wasn't passive, but I wasn't passionate enough to be out in the forefront. I kind of sat on the sidelines. I mean, I did my duty and voted, but I didn't ignite other people. And I believe with the platform that we have here at KHOI, it's my duty to motivate people to be at least engaged.
Well, how do you do that?
Lead by example. Get out. Don't just watch the news or just listen to the news. Get out and ask questions. Come to some of these events. We welcome here at the KHOI to sit down and talk to some of the people here. Just be more active in your community. That way you know what's going on in the community, and you may find out some things that you could do to change it, just volunteering.
I believe you first got involved with the Rights for All campaign at the ACLU.
Yes.
How did that happen?
It's a funny story. I spent a lot of time with my daughters, my daughter Brianna and Kyla, and they're young adults. And we were watching something on television, it was something political or something. And I decided right then and there that I wanted to not just talk to them about it. I decided I wanted to take part in what was going on. So I just looked up the ACLU, and I knew that they do a lot of good work in the communities. I just looked them up online. I filled out an application to volunteer. And like a week later, somebody contacted me. And his name is Ryan. Shout out to Ryan. And he invited me to go meet a candidate. And it was Marion Williamson. So I met Marion Williamson out at Iowa State. And I got to ask her a question. And the question was about incarceration and rights for felons. And I told a story about how my father is a felon and how almost every male in my family, pretty much every male in my family has a felony. At least my father, my stepfather, my brother, his son. It was so powerful, I guess, the way I told the story. I'm not going to get into the story that Iowa State Daily did a story on me about it. And Miriam liked it so much, she introduced me to her campaign manager here in Iowa.
Did you get an interview with Marianne Williamson?
No. I spoke to her afterwards. I just asked that question. And she answered the question, of course. And we chit-chatted a little bit afterwards, but I didn't get a sit-down interview or nothing recorded. That was actually the first event I went to. But I learned a lot from that event. The second event I went to was with, I believe, Beto O'Rourke. And same thing there. I didn't get an interview with his camp either. I got to ask him a question for the ACLU. And he kind of jogged around the question a little bit. But I think that this time around, hopefully, because his people contacted me yesterday, we can get that interview this time. But I did get one with Castro. Julian Castro gave me a good 15-minute interview. And it was for the radio station. So I'm definitely get you to record in that interview.
Okay.
It was good. He answered every question I asked him.
Well, and he's having a hard time with his campaign because he's not.
He's not as known. He's not as known.
He's not as known, and he's not. There's a cutoff in the numbers, and he's really struggling to get on the list for the debate.
Yeah, that's the sad thing when you got so many candidates. You know, you have so many. You got 23, I believe, people running right now. Everybody wants the debates. I think the generation that we're in right now, the one thing that connects white, black, young, and old right now is music. That's one of the reasons why I'm proud to be working here at KHUI, because I can spread happiness and joy and unity through music. So in between playing the music, the hip-hop, because I play current hip-hop and R&B, in between the music, I try to educate and inform. So I thank KHUI and the volunteers and the staff here at KHUI for my years of service being here.
We thank you.
I just happen to have the question that Merle Crabb asked of Cory Booker, as well as Cory Booker's thorough answer to that question.
My name is Merle. I'm an ACLU Rights for All volunteer. Also, I'm a DJ host in Ames, Iowa, KHUI, 89.1 FM.
Do you play Tony?
I play current hip hop.
Oh, you play current hip hop?
Current hip hop.
Chance the Rapper?
No old school, that's down here.
So you play Chance?
I play Chance.
Okay, good.
I got a question. I know you spoke on criminal and justice reform a little bit.
Yes, sir.
But I wanted to know, since our country locks up people at a higher rate than any other country in the world.
Yes, sir.
And I wanted to know if you were willing to commit to cutting that in half if elected in your first term.
So Merle is really preaching gospel. There's a group actually was formed called Cut 50, which is cut our incarceration rates in half. Even if we cut our incarceration rates in half, we would still have higher incarceration rates than most nations.
Wow.
And so my commitment is to cut 50s, to cut that in half. And let me just not tell you, it's nice to say ambitious goals.
Right.
I want to tell you how we're going to do that. Number one is we need to stop the recidivism rates that we have in this country that are so high. You want to know the best way to stop our recidivism? A job.
Income.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is one of the biggest sources of our criminal justice system, by having treatment, mental health care, and employment opportunities for people who have been involved in the criminal justice system. And then number two is we're going to lower and eliminate many mandatory minimums. We've incentivized states to create those. They take all power away from judges and prosecutors who have the ability to make those decisions. There are so many accounts of judges saying to themselves, I have nothing to do. This is the mandatory minimum, but you really don't deserve that.
Wow.
And let's go further to that. One of the best ways to cut the prison population is actually stop people from going to prison in the first place. And so there are pipelines we have to stop. I've already mentioned one for mental health and addiction, but we also have to cut the school-to-prison pipeline.
Amen.
The Obama administration, you all got to know I miss Obama. And hold on, and I miss her husband too. But Michelle's husband was doing some really good things to deal with the school-to-prison pipeline.
Yeah.
There are things we can do to stop people going. One of the best ways to attack people going to incarceration is to attack poverty.
Yeah.
To attack poverty. And so that's why things like my RISE credit, things like my baby bonds, are things that lift people out of poverty and will ultimately lower incarceration.
To wrap up our show today, we are shifting away from politics to the Ames downtown, and we have Sarah Dvorsky, events coordinator for the Ames Main Street, and her guest, Sonia Stolze Newstrom, who is the vice president of the Downtown Business Association.
Yes.
So what's coming up?
Yeah, so we have a very busy July that we are quite excited about. Starting off with the 4th of July parade on the 4th of July. The parade begins at 11 a.m., but go ahead and make sure to arrive early so you can get a good viewing spot of the parade. We are still taking entries into the parade for floats, cars. We have groups walking. We're still taking entries, so go ahead and check out our website for more information on that. Or if you're interested in volunteering this event, we do have a lot of volunteers, a lot of different opportunities to get involved within Main Street and the 4th of July. A couple of things that will be going on downtown during the 4th of July. The Bill Riley Talent Show is also on the 4th. That will be 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. And then Doc Dogs will be jumping off of 5th and Burnett. So just a cool chance to see some dogs jump in a makeshift pool. So we're excited for that. After the 4th of July, we'll have Foodies and Brew on July 11th from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. That event is located at the Airport Hangar off Airport Road. Tickets are available on our website as well as in the Chamber office.
Now, that is clearly a little bit off Main Street if it's out at the airport. So how do you include the airport in Main Street?
Definitely. So since it's an event that's a fundraiser for Ames Main Street, we just host at the airport hangar just as a different location, just to kind of help raise awareness for Ames Main Street in different areas throughout the community.
Yes, and historically with the event, rain has been an issue. And it does damper the fundraising for our organization and the fun, really. So we
yes,
found
it's not much fun to have Foodies and Brew
no,
in the rain.
Soggy crackers are no fun. So having it at the hangar allows us to assure the restaurants and breweries and wineries that are involved that they will be able to have a lovely time serving their beautiful things to people who are not wet.
Well, as I recall, actually, one year, several years ago, I don't know whether either of you were involved in this, we had it out here on Douglas Avenue, the street
yes.
closed off.
Yes,
it indeed. Fortunately was a pretty nice day.
Yes, we had some lovely days out on Douglas. It was historically, actually, we started it out there and it was lovely, but there just weren't enough tents to cover the scale of the event
right.
to continue having it there.
Sounds like it's a huge event
mm-hmm.
and really very interesting because one of the things that you accomplish, and this is from an outsider looking at what you're doing, is that you really make people aware of just how much there is in downtown Ames.
Absolutely.
The variety and of course, you bring in things you that aren't directly connected to the shops, but that are fun and are important.
Yes, and
come
part
to.
Of the hope of that is that if somebody's coming down to see something that they're very interested in and they happen to see or end up going into a shop that they otherwise wouldn't have, then it's kind of a win-win
mm-hmm.
because it builds awareness for the people that are down here working hard every day, selling and, you know, providing services for our community. But it also brings interesting things into Ames and to downtown.
So, I have a question about the 4th of July parade, and that is in other towns, I know, for example, in the Story City Scandinavian Days Parade, they often have political candidates marching. Now, how do you handle that? Do you could have a lot. Do you have some way of dealing with that?
Yeah, we'll have we will also have political candidates. They have the opportunity to register for the parade as well. We just kind of pre-register everyone just to make sure that we have enough space for everyone to join the parade and then just kind of go from there.
Okay, so
everyone's welcome.
Yeah, everybody's welcome. Even political candidates.
Yes.
And some years there are more than other years, it seems.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens this year. Yes.
Absolutely.
So now, after the 4th of July, I understand there's some other things going on?
Yep, so after the 4th of July, we'll go into Foodies and Brew at the airport hangar, and then after that, we'll have summer sidewalk sales downtown from July 25th to 27th. So just an opportunity for the businesses down here to have another sale right before school starts.
Since we have a member of your board of directors here, I'd be interested to know just how all of these things happen. I mean, it seems to me that recently we've had a big event almost every weekend or week, plus the farmers market. That's part of what you do too, isn't it?
Yes, and the farmers market's not just associated with Ames Main Street. It's also associated with the Ames Chamber of Commerce. It's another one of the organizations that falls under the blanket of that organization. So it's a lot of organizations really working together and cooperatively to bring events and happenings to our community. It's really a wonderful thing because everybody's doing their part.
So, and have you always had a full-time, are you a full-time coordinator, Sarah?
Yes. My position is new for Ames Main Street.
I wondered because I've had friends who were business owners, and it sounded to me from talking to them that was kind of a burden, that it was a lot of work in addition to running their business. And so you don't have a business besides Ames Main Street to worry about, right?
Correct.
Okay. So what are some of the different committees that you have in your organization?
Well, we have our promotions committee, which works on the events, which are the most public and noticeable things that our organization is doing, which are wonderful. And the goal of the events, one of them is to bring people downtown. Another one is to get people into the businesses and other services that are downtown, and also just to build a community, a sense of community down here, and make downtown a place to draw people, not just for special events, but on the day-to-day basis as well. We also have a economic vitality committee that works to help businesses to improve what they're doing within their business to draw customers or clients to come in and work with the chamber and the city and other organizations to help build up downtown as a economic center for our community. And we have our design committee, and they are very busy helping to improve the look and the feel of downtown. They were very involved in the flower improvements that we've done down here along with the Ames Foundation. We worked cooperatively with them to get that really up and running, and improvements, which I'm loving, but I bet you do too.
Yeah.
Also, they worked on a project everybody else might notice. The benches downtown were resurfaced and painted by local artists, and the upkeep on those actually is pretty complicated. I haven't been involved, but I've admired people that have been involved in that. And they also work with the facade program, helping businesses to try to improve the look of the fronts of their businesses so that they can continue to draw customers. The statistics on facade improvements are really impressive, bringing more people in and more tax basis for the community. It's a really wonderful, I guess, symbiotic situation.
Well, you're talking about the facade grant. You know, the Pentorium was the recipient of a facade grant.
Right.
Shortly after we opened, which included, I guess, help with our windows. Before, the windows had been kind of half plywood. And then we got our big bay window, not bay, you know.
Yes.
Our display windows, I
guess.
Absolutely. And also our awning, which is very important.
Absolutely. And design changes that bring things back to a more historically relevant view and look downtown are welcome and exciting.
Yes. And so do you have anything else that you're responsible for?
But right now for Ames Main Street, we actually have a survey that we've sent out to investors and business owners within downtown Ames. We're just interested to get a little more feedback about what these our investors and business owners enjoy about downtown Ames, and then what Ames Main Street can improve on. And so we're highly encouraging everyone to go ahead and take that survey, which they can find in the weekly emails they receive. And if they don't receive those emails, go ahead, subscribe on our website. We'd love to kind of get that out to more people and just kind of share what all is going on in downtown Ames.
Well, I have a question about membership.
Yeah.
Do you, the members of the Ames Business Association, are they required to become members of the Business Association and the Chamber of Commerce, or how does that work?
So how it works in – so Ames Main Street is the organization for downtown Ames. So any business owner that is – resides within the Ames downtown district, they are a member in – Ames Main Street automatically. So if, but the difference is if they're an investor versus a member. So investors, they're ones who do financially help support Ames Main Street.
And another thing that Ames Main Street does is try to help serve as a communication venue between the city and what they have going on and what's the business owners downtown. So we try to serve as help to help improve communications. Communication is important.
And how do you do that?
Well, we have lots of ways that we do that. Sometimes the city will come to our general membership meetings. We had a gentleman come and discuss what was going to be going on with construction in the alleyways upcoming. And we also have an email list of the business owners downtown. We put out a – how frequently do we put out our
– Weekly.
Weekly. We put out a weekly email. Obviously, I am not the one writing that. And that lists events and other happenings that are going on downtown. And we do, you know, we have a running list of the active business owners so that we can reach out specifically if we need to. So kind of a liaison.
And you mentioned the alleyways. I particularly noticed that because I often cut through the alley between Douglas and Kellogg.
Mm-hmm.
There are murals on the back of some of those businesses.
Absolutely. I think it's wonderful that there are business owners that own the building that they're in, and they are very – they care. They care about what's going on, not just in the front but in the back of their building as well. Sometimes they park back there, and they definitely have a lot of pride in what they're doing. They are small business owners, and that carries a sense of pride just within itself. And I think that improving the fronts and the backs of their buildings help, again, would just improve the walkability of downtown and make it a nicer place to be.
Well, thank you. Well, thanks for coming in today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having
thanks
me.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. In the spirit of Main Street, I'd like to promote an event that will be taking place right here at the Pantorium on Wednesday, June 19th at 7 p.m. by playing just a little bit of Royce Johns, who will be our featured performer at the Pantorium Sessions.
He said, I love you till I die. She told him you'd forget in time. As the years went slowly by, she still preyed upon his mind. He kept her picture on his wall. Went half crazy now and then. He still loved her through it all, hoping she'd come back again. Kept some letters by his bed, and in 1962 he had underlined in red every single I love you. Came to see him just today. Oh, but I didn't see no tears. All dressed up to go away. First time I'd seen him smiling here. He stopped loving her today. They placed a wreath upon his door. Soon they'll carry him away. He stopped loving her. Thank you. It's only she came to see him one last time. Oh, and we all wondered if she would. It kept running through my mind. This time is over her for good. He stopped loving her today. It's a wreath upon his door. Soon they'll carry him away. He stopped loving her today.
And right here in our own cultural district in Ames tonight, we have a film, Beyond Crisis, which is a different kind of drama than Macbeth. And this is sponsored by Ames Climate Action Team in partnership with the Ames Public Library and the Ames Friends. I mean, the Friends of the Library. Beyond Crisis is a story of hope for a rapidly changing world, a meditative call to action that explores what it means to be living in the new era of climate change. This film paints an inspiring vision of a better world we could be building together if we find the courage to face the shared global crisis. And there is a discussion afterwards. I know that the climate action team is planning. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I've been your host for today, Susan Franzen. And other voices you heard were Dennis Hart, Kinsey Phillips, Cal Halliburton, Mel Crabb, Sarah Dvorsky, and Sonia Stolze Neustrom. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on KHOI at 89.1 FM on Mondays and Wednesdays, and 5 p.m. on Fridays. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There, you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. That's khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Cynthia McClure. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was June is Bustin' Out All Over, sung by Renee Fleming from the 2018 revival of Rodgers and Hammerstein's Carousel. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just look for the yellow donate button. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is provided in part by Northminster Presbyterian Church, presenting the 2019 Vacation Bible School, Marketplace 29 AD, an opportunity for experiential learning. Children from preschool to sixth grade are invited to visit and interact with a recreated marketplace from biblical times, June 16th to the 20th, from 6 o'clock to 8 p.m. Information and registration forms are found at www.amesnpc.org.
Funding for KHOI is provided in part by the 2019-2020 Performing Arts Series at Stevens Auditorium. For information on ticket packages and upcoming performances, go to center.iastate.edu.